little clips on social media, you find. And this is something you need to do. You need to engage a lot more with them. Welcome back to ACCT on Island Trade and this is today. We're talking about Ahlak, of course, talking about the Ahlak of Martyrs in particular. And I've just started to sort of give a reminder, urge all of us to just become even more engaged with the martyrs. Because obviously, you're probably well aware that obviously our times throughout the world now are very unusual times. And you know, one of the things we can do, if we're aware that you know, there's so much oppression happening in the world, there's so much cruelty, there's so much violence. Well, rather than fall into a despairing attitude, what we should be doing is strengthening ourselves, strengthening our hearts, improving our ahlak. Because for sure, this is something that's beneficial for us. We gain greater proximity to Allah, and then shall we sort of stay on this path towards Allah anyway. But also, it helps the people around us, because we do need these pure-hearted people. So whether it's our martyrs who are with us, they're certainly not dead, they're truly alive now. Or whether it's our people in our daily lives, so whether if we have really good role models, if, for example, one of our parents or another family member is just a very good, non-judgmental, very patient and calm person, who may be someone that we always go to when we have questions. Let's sort of be directed more towards them to sort of benefit from that. Because you know, there's the other thing, and this is something the martyrs, all of them did. When we sort of get closer to the pure-hearted people, the good people, their traits, in a sense, rub off on us. We benefit. So we will then find that our habits improve, our ahlak improves, because you know, we even unconsciously, we will start to sort of imitate their words, their way of behavior, and we will adopt their values. If we ourselves do not have the best values yet, then for sure we will probably start to adopt their values, all those good values of the good people. So inshallah, this is just, let's say, a reminder to also make sure whether we're really spending enough time with all the good people we know. And nowadays, especially, it's becoming more and more important. Inshallah. So that was it for today, and I look forward to welcoming you to another episode of ACCT, your online training. Farewell for now. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of A to Z. And for more information, please also visit our website at www.iranradio.ir. Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at farstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. Thank you for joining us. You are listening to Iran Radio, and here are some interesting facts about the Holy Quran. I invite you to listen. Surah Yasin is considered the heart of the Quran for its tremendous benefits. The best drink according to Quran is milk. In the Quran, Allah also describes the rivers of milk in the heaven. The best food according to Quran is honey, which cures several problems and is the sweetest gift to humans from Allah. Normally, the Quran declares Friday as the most blessed day of the month. The month of Ramadan is the best month of the year, and the night of Qadr has been described as a night better than 1,000 months, and significance is described in the Surah Al-Fajr. We are in the studio of Iran Radio with a full slate of engaging content, meaningful dialogue, and stories that stay with you long after the broadcast ends. So wherever you are, make yourself at home and just getting started. First, you'll hear more of our expertly crafted radio productions. Next is Youth Station. Following that, we'll bring you powerful insights from leaders' speech. Listen to English translations of selected statements and speeches by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution on various occasions, a source of profound wisdom. Then join us as we go around the world with reporters, our correspondents from across the globe, who bring you fascinating reports on our radio subjects from their regions, offering a unique global perspective. So don't go anywhere. Up next is another segment of our radio productions.
From Washington, they point out drugs here, drugs there. Let's get rid of them. Let's stage exclusive. Today, we have an American expert on the subject who has completely different data. So buckle up as we start today's Gringo. A few months ago, I received a video featuring an American living here in Mexico named Jeremy Shepard. I couldn't believe what I was hearing, not just about drugs, but also about geopolitical issues and food. He hails from the United States, and he moved to Mexico for reasons that you will learn about today here on the radio. This is a man who has a deep understanding of the drug situation in the U.S. He is well aware of the actions taken by various American governments around the globe.
This video depicts a high-ranking Chinese official seeking stability amidst a turbulent situation. Throughout his life, this man has honestly risen to a prominent position. But he now realizes that no matter how high his status, it is not enough to shield his family from the terror that surrounds them. He yearns to take control of his destiny and find a way to save his family and the achievements he has built. As a result, he makes the difficult yet crucial decision to securely reach out to the CIA. This video is produced by the CIA. It serves as a perfect example of how US interference is orchestrated around the globe. It's in Chinese, and its aim is for the Chinese to see it. The goal is to encourage them to join the United States, to betray the Chinese government, to work for the CIA, or at least to spark some doubt about the need for change in their country. It is directed at the people, politicians, and military, and somehow it reaches them. Discussing corruption, terrorism, or drugs to undermine countries from within is always their perfect tool. It is a germ that seeks destabilization, soft coups, military coups, government changes, and alignment with the United States. Coups made in the USA.
My dear friends, it's truly a personal honor and pleasure for me to have the presence of Gringo here in the Gringo studio.
Plants. This is quite significant in a world where humanity has been establishing ideas and creating internal narratives. It's very challenging for people to inform themselves against their own beliefs.
Yes, what you mentioned about multiples and so on. Honestly, even after repeating that, I still get surprised by one. I usually hear from around that. For example, in the 1800s, these things were absolutely real. I do some research and wow, the more you dig, the more you find. We all know the history that we were taught in school. It shouldn't be shocking that, though, they did some really terrible things in Vietnam, as you kind of already knew. But many, even those who lived through the 80s and the dirty wars in Latin America, say, oh, but that was the decade when we had no war, because the news weren't covering it. I mean, in the 70s, the news were there. In the 90s, they presented it like a video game. While they were destroying public infrastructure, things like water purification systems, they would say it was military targets.
Well, Jeremy, what happened to you that makes you not a typical American?
Well, I would love to lie and say, no, no, there are more of us. But you see, the situation in my country is what it is.
There are very few of them in the
So it's like, okay, there are indeed many people who didn't go out to shoot because they realize that this whole thing we do is like theater. Ah, this is when you can express your opinions. Do you want Trump or Trump?
Who decides on coups, overthrows, and interventions? Yeah, the researchers. Is it the CIA, the National Security Agency, the Pentagon, or a combination of all of them?
I mean, supposedly the idea behind forming the CIA in the 40s was to bring together all these different departments into one central place. And then it's like, oh, what if we created about 45 new agencies that essentially do the same thing? So honestly, I don't understand why they have a CIA and DIA when they all basically perform the same tasks, including the dirty work we talk about, which in English is referred to as wet work, right, like dirty jobs. These are almost never the ones that can be identified as, you know, people. They're more like assets, right?
In other words, there are several factors that make the decision right. Obviously, it's not just the president alone. He is merely the figurehead placed there, but there are others behind the scenes. Nixon, during his time, initiated this so-called war on drugs, which has proven to be not only a failure, but also misleading, right?
Well, I believe it wasn't a failure. It did exactly what it was designed to do, which is to imprison more people, specifically more African Americans. Because if we look at it in the terms they use, like, oh, well, we're going to eliminate drugs, while not only was it a failure, but it actually increased the amount of drugs, and of course, cheaper, and in more parts of the country and the world, right? Then, okay, how is it possible that with so much money and resources, and after having nearly 50 or 60 years in this war, why did they lose every battle? And it's like, because it's never really about the damn drugs. Drugs are just an excuse. I mean, this is Atwater, one of the advisors in Reagan's office. I can't remember if he was the secretary of this or that, but he explained it very well, that it has to be this way, basically on purpose.
You said the drugs thing is just an excuse.
Ah, yes, specifically, you mentioned that. Ah, yes, we associate marijuana with black individuals, and we associate, or rather, heroin more with them, or marijuana with kidneys. And we can arrest them whenever we want and say, ah, they had such and such drug use. Okay, maybe that's true, maybe not, but all right. The big question is, like, where do all these drugs come from? There isn't, like, a poppy field in the United States. I mean, it just doesn't exist. And there aren't coca leaves in the mountains of Denver, you know. Everything has to come from really far away. It's like the hippies that I mean back in that time. I'm a jazz musician. So often because it was the 40s, there were all these things that wanted to do. I mean, enough to supply so many cities. I mean, all the addicts you see in the United States, you know. Okay, and how many drugs does that person consume? The amount is reported is way bigger. You shouldn't be surprised to hear stories. Bringing in planes like tons per week when you say tons. And you hear, yes, that's how much the demand
was.
Well, right now, with Venezuela, Cartel of the Suns, unlike Colombia, there it is. The president is a Cuban anyway. I'm not saying there aren't situations in other countries. That's true, but in the end, the point is that the excuse is very clear. I mean, what is it?
That's not the thing to take.
cocaine.
Nunca paro el camión que trae 8 toneladas de cocaína.
I have always said in my discussions that in the game of drug trafficking, much like in chess, we shouldn't focus on pawns, knights, rooks, queens, kings, or bishops. Instead, we should pay attention to those who are moving the chess pieces. Here I feel a need to mention that Jeremy, as he has allowed me to address this topic since he has spoken about it publicly, had a near-death experience with drug use. After leaving the United States, you came to Mexico for rehabilitation. Is that correct? Well, based on that experience you went through, what can you share with the audience who are always pointing fingers, saying, we need to check it ourselves, we should test it, when there are many people in political power who even consume cocaine and such?
Yeah, that's quite noticeable.
Yeah, noticeable.
That's the kilometers.
From miles away, right? Well, actually, this is like a joke because I talk about that. I mean, I always believe that my personal life is the least interesting thing my channel can discuss. So if I include it in something like this, it's like, in the end, quick, and so on.
But you have an experience. You embodied an experience, and that's what you share.
You've watched the video all the way to the end, while many others don't. Then, as you mentioned, yes, I was addicted to heroin 6 years ago, right? And people are like, oh, really? Then someone in the chat says, what, go home, you never finished the video. It's just that I didn't want to start with that. I wanted to begin with, look, this is the story of why I started researching it, because I was genuinely curious about why there's so much of that drug in my country. Especially when we're there in places like Vietnam and Afghanistan. Well, we were actually in these places for help, while Kuomintang, like the nationalist Chinese who were in exile in what is now Myanmar or another place. I mean, what's going on? Suddenly, so much heroin is coming from high poverty to the United States. It's like, there seems to be a pattern, doesn't it? So we have officially ended the war in Afghanistan. Or rather, it lasted 20 years and now they're out. I honestly thought it would take more than just 24 hours, but no, it feels like it should be some sort of record for the Guinness Book, right? But after that, it was like, oh, now we have synthetic opioids, which are the new trend. A lot of people are importing fentanyl and other substances from various places, and when they want to place blame, they point fingers at Mexico or China. It's like, yes, it seems to come from multiple sources, but the customers are always you, right? And at what point do you stop pointing fingers and say, oh, you are a bad person for selling drugs?
Do you think Donald Trump is going to invade Mexico?
Honestly, I hope not, because I live here. I mean, this is where all my belongings are. But I don't think so. I mean, the truth is, yes, the United States has come to Mexico for quite a while, like 3 major attempts, and 2 of them were complete failures. Yet they declared victory afterward, like a victory in the mission to capture Pancho Villa, even though they didn't catch it. It was a victory, that's how they teach us, but in fact, it sounds like they didn't catch it.
So why all this theatrics? Why all this drama? Well, for me, you know that it has taken a lot of leading and hard work to get to this understanding. But you have an experience within the United States. For instance, right now, the excuse about Venezuelan oil, the situation with Mexico, the control of what migration. In other words, that narrative about drugs and bad guys is used, and many people believe it.
Mucho más de the ground and negocio case about here.
However, your personal purpose of following you on your channel is truly worth it. I mean, it's not just worth it, it's definitely worth watching. Do you do it all by yourself, or do you have a team?
Yeah. station.
Youngest, say, member of the society, so I don't want to tell them this.
sometimes, you know, I speak to my teachers who are basically consultants for family careers, and they tell me that it's really astonishing that some of the reasons why young couples, they come to us, and they tell us why is the reason that they want to be divorced, for example, they die. My wife, she doesn't cook. What is this? This is fear of impatience. This is fear. The fear minimum of living with someone, you know, is tolerating certain mistakes. Even mistakes that they don't accept.
Why is your marriage and your husband and love person not going to be perfect?
Exactly, and just like you're not perfect. Yeah, just like you're not perfect. There are no two perfect persons in the world. Well, except for the infallibles. We learn from them how to tolerate each other. When one person becomes two, there are two opinions, there are two cultures, there are two favorites, there are two different things, there are two opinions, they're completely different. Exactly. So they both of them have minds, both of them have thought processes that should be, you know, respected. Both of them go through difficulties in their life. You know, the sister who is at the home might be going through difficulties that the man who is working in the workplace is not going through. And likewise, vice versa. The person who is working in the workplace might be going through difficulties that the sister might not be imagining. Understand each other. Appreciate each other. Whenever the anger crashes into your life, encroaches in your life, put it down, take a step back, think about it, be tolerant. Yes, he might be wrong, she might be wrong, fine. You were wrong many times as well. Just even if you can't fix it, those situations which you can sit down and talk, perfect, ideal, sit down, talk, get this done, get this through, it's perfect. But in those situations where either of them are stubborn, or both of them are stubborn, bear it, it's fine. You don't have to have a perfect spouse. There is no such thing as whatever I tell him or her, he's gonna listen. It's fine, tolerate it. It's okay for you to not have the perfect food and the 1-star, 2-star Michelin food coming to your plate. It's okay if the guy does not listen to you when you tell him to put, you know, his clothes in the right place or whatever the case is. It's very naive for you to now be married and then come back. And I think this is something extremely important to tolerate as a young couple, because we see the divorce rate in the generation before us as close to zero. How many times have you seen parents and grandparents, you know, you heard from them that person? Very, you know, probably cases whereby it's deserving. Just because of intolerance.
Yeah, man, you're very excited to call you about this emotional avoidance. We see people even not daring to start a relationship with their new partner because they are afraid. What if the person they're married will like someone you hate? What if one day they will come home and say something to their new wife? How am I going to react? Am I going to end the relationship off the cuff? Or am I going to bury it? How am I going to bury it? So we have this fear as well. Many of you today, all of them, many of them are scared of this emotional bond because they avoid it because they're scared of the moments that they have to be of tolerating each other, the moments that they have to sometimes forget about what they believe in or to try to get along with the other person.
Exactly. So let's talk a bit more about the boundaries. We challenge the boundaries with a lot of scenarios. Let's talk more about the boundaries between exposing things and keeping things, inshallah, after.
This is IRIB English Radio. You are listening to News Station.
Welcome back, and let's move on to the boundaries. What are the boundaries, and how can I define my communication with the people who are going to define my understanding of this culture? If you say you cannot answer the question if this ideology, this mindset is either good or bad, so how am I going to define it for myself to take advantage of it?
Okay. Should I throw it or should I keep it? What really makes that decision? And let me challenge you. Let me put out some more challenging scenarios. The consumer culture. trains us to upgrade rather than keep getting the most latest one. You find your computer, it's fine, working for you, good. Should you spend more money on upgrading, even if you have it? Even you have the money, you have the abundance, right?
Why would they change it?
That's the question. Why would you change it? It's more upgrading of a model. You're moving from Musk. I'm not going to name any brand because I don't want to bring in any further discussion or further debate. But phone A to phone B, phone 16 to phone 17. This crazy culture of there is one level above this. I'm waiting. Let me get that one. It came out just recently. Let me get that one. Is that a good culture per se? Upgrading when you have the buttons, you have the buttons. Should you keep upgrading? Is that something that sounds good?
Not necessarily. We need software, but this I have watched regarding this idea that many even children learn today that you have to change your phone from this to that. My students keep asking me this time, teacher, what is your phone? That phone came out. Why didn't you go for this one? Why didn't you change it to the new one? I mean, even children and kids know today that they have to go for the best brands, they have to keep upgrading. But why? My question is,
let's look at both the scenarios. Both sides. Why can't we just be content and satisfied with what we have until it no longer satisfies our needs, than to just, you know, crazily and, you know, extremely anxiously go after upgrading? Take a look at both the sides. And now there is a new upgraded thing, but this what I have is looking after my needs perfectly. Yeah, so there is no problem in that. And this new thing is just putting more money in.
Some people do need the upgraded version. And like, if my job is something that has to be done by the phone, for example, with the laptop, and I have to keep upgrading because I have to be upgrading my job. So it's accepted in this case.
You know where we really get that conflict is when we think about the progress, human progress, technological progress. It's actually driven by the, you know, by the sales that happen in the market. So let's say a phone company brings a phone X, and then let me give a number to it, phone 12, and then for a year they have invested in their R&D and their, you know, research and development, and then they bring in phone 13 now, right? They've upgraded from one to the other. Now what if everybody stays with that phone 12 and does not go buy the phone 13? That company will basically dilute, will basically go bankrupt because they're not having any sales. Now this, why I brought this up is because this culture is not necessarily only for consumers, us as Gen Z consumers, but it's a general societal culture, and this needs to change. And you know how socially this affects? Take a look at people who look at other people, and they see that they're upgrading and they're somewhat improving in the parent part of it. If you look at the shell of it, they're improving, and they might have the abundance of wealth to do so, but you don't. And this person who doesn't is constantly in that state of, I wish I had this. This social culture is going to not only stop between the companies and the consumers upgrading, but it's going to encroach into people who are not upgrading, saying maybe I should do so. And they are now under pressure, both in terms of wealth, both in terms of other aspects of their life, just for the sake of upgrading the upgrade.
Yeah, exactly. And as you truly mentioned, we have to keep this balance, this education, this mindset, this literacy, that not everything that is upgraded, that is called to be new, has to be necessarily mine. We have to keep this literacy that once we need something, we can go for it, or unless we can just forget about it.
I think we did enlist a lot of challenges in this episode, and we did clearly draw the line between what should be a disposable and what should not be disposable. Whatever is fixable, we should try our best to do so. And this consumer culture needs to change, not only on the consumer level, but entire society. Both the businesses and the consumers need to take heed that, you know, being content with what we have, there's a lot more to be said, and unfortunately we're way out of our limit in terms of time. Inshallah, maybe, we're not sure. Maybe if we do have the opportunity and the tawfiq, we'll definitely touch on this topic in another episode, inshallah. For now, we will bid you farewell. Thank you for listening to us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you, dear youth, will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about this.
Discuss that, inshallah, in the next session. Assalamu alaikum.
Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. And don't go away.
Continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Assalamu alaikum. Wassalamu alaikum. Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
The following is part of the speech delivered on April 27th, 2017 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the Supreme Leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the participants of the 34th International Quran Competitions. What is the main problem of the Islamic Ummah today? The main problem is the domination of Western culture over the Islamic Ummah. The main problem is the domination of the Western economy and Western politics over the Islamic Ummah. These are the main problems. Today, there is no sign of Islamic identity in many Islamic countries. Of course, the people in such countries are Muslims. They say daily prayers, they fast, and they probably pay zakat. But society as a whole is lacking in Islamic identity. In other words, there is not a personality or a reality that confronts the reality of evil and kufr. That is why Westerners intervene. They interfere in their culture, in their belief, in their economy, and in their social relationships, and they control their politics. The result is that because of lack of a single identity inside Islamic society, there is fighting, war, hatred, and lack of understanding. This is what happens. Today, the world of evil is after destroying and annihilating this identity. They want to destroy everything that has remained from this identity in every part of the world. This is an Islamic principle. Whoever rejects evil and believes in Allah has grasped the most trustworthy power that never breaks, and Allah hears and knows all things.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in inside countries. Nations should unite.
يكفر بالطاغوت ويؤمن بالله فقد استمسك بالعروة الوثقى لا انفصام لها والله سميع عليم.
This is a truth. If we understand this truth correctly, we are committed to it. If we pursue it, and if we turn it into a public reality in the Islamic community and the Islamic community, notice what a great transformation will take. Notice what a great transformation this is. And there are hundreds of such
is taking advantage of our distance from the world. The enemy is injecting in us lack of faith, decadence, and dependence on himself on a daily basis.
Yeah.
Sydney University. The statement is widely viewed as an open declaration of hostility toward the region, rather than mere
political.
This entity threatens the entire Arab world, not just Syria or Palestine. We aren't afraid, but there must be a broader popular response, especially by Arabs. Sadly, people's reaction remains slow, while some governments align with Israel.
Syrians also connect these statements to recent Israeli incursions in the south, including the attack on Beirut. Many view these events as early indicators of a dangerous shift that may eventually demand decisive action. This regime won't stop in Palestine. It wants full control of the region in order to control all the resources of its people. It has been expanding in southern Syria for over a year now. Resistance is our natural and legitimate response by any means available. Palestinians see that any confrontation with Israel is part of their struggle, as they have always shared destiny with the Syrians. They consider this a common struggle. We must confront this enemy. We know from our experience as Palestinians that the only response to force and retreat is only aggression. Diplomacy and agreements have no effect because its nature is rooted in violence. As people and governments, we must resist until all occupied lands, from the Golan to Palestine, are reclaimed. From Damascus to the southern countries, Syrians say these threats only strengthen their sense of unity. As tensions rise, many insist they're prepared to face any challenge